Sex is the life force energy that runs through us all. Can you use sexual energy for your spiritual evolution? Or perhaps for emotional healing? Is it even possible? Clinical sexologist Dr. Martha Tara Lee will explore all these and more on Eros Evolution on Om Times Radio.
Hello, hello, and welcome to Eros Evolution. This is where sexuality and spirituality meets. My name is Martha. I'm a clinical sexologist with a doctorate in human sexuality and a master's in counseling now. I'm from Eros Coaching. That's eroscoaching.com. And welcome to today's show. Today we'll be talking about moving from shame to courage. And it's not often that we have an episode focusing on shame, and it's a really important topic. And we are going to be with Dr. Shameless. She calls herself Dr. Shameless, and she guides people regardless of age, gender, identity, experience, and anything else on a journey from sexual shame to courage in order to be your most authentic sexual self. Her approach has people examine the origins of shame, deconstruct the validity of shameful self-talk, identify the harm shame causes, and create a new paradigm embracing the bold, genuine, and healthier attitudes living beneath the surface. So Dr. Shameless has a passion around joy, personal growth, and pleasure for pleasure's sake. More about her, she's a licensed clinical professional counselor practicing in Las Vegas, Nevada. She's a clinical sexologist and holds the degree of Doctor of Human Sexuality. So her friends describe her approach to life as unapologetic. So it sparked an introspective examination of what that meant and why others didn't live that way. She's the product of coming of age in the early 1980s in the US when HIV and AIDS made their way into the popular venicillia, and virginity was at a premium and girls were required to function as sexual behavior gatekeepers. She strives to embolden people to enjoy the gifts of sexuality and pass them on to future generations. So you can follow Dr. Shameless by going to the website. That's drshameless.com. Same on Twitter and Facebook, except you add 702, kind of James Bond code, I guess. And her offerings includes downloadable worksheets and information, individual coaching, therapy, and workshops. So welcome to the show.
Thank you so much. I'm so excited to be here with you.
Thank you. So in this show, I call you Dr. Shameless. So just for listeners out there, is there any reason why you're not using your real name?
Yes, thanks for asking. So here in Nevada, I'm a licensed clinical professional counselor and therefore governed by a board of examiners that are at the state level. And one of the things that sort of falls in a gray area are areas of sexuality where there might be a misperception of things like body work or sensual massage or things like that that might be affiliated with Dr. Shameless that they might construe as being part of my private practice. And I just don't want to risk my licensure at this time before those things are cleared up.
Yeah, so it's basically just creating a different identity for different aspects of your practice.
Correct, right.
Yeah. So Dr. Shameless doesn't have anything to hide, it's just that it's important for the sake of clarity to separate those mm-hmm. identities. And it's important because she's put in a lot of effort into her training. And it doesn't make sense to lose her licensure for the good work that you do.
Right, right. And I appreciate that opportunity to clarify that for the listeners.
Yeah. So you started to explain in your profile about why you call yourself Dr. Shameless. So your friends describe you as unapologetic. And that started you on this journey to explore what that meant for you. Is that right?
It did. It was interesting. I was living with a male roommate, strictly in a platonic way. We were just friends. And I found myself thinking about that I needed to explain or defend myself in terms of any, you know, sexual behaviors or any, you know, interludes or experiences. And I didn't want to have to defend or explain myself. And I thought about that, and I mentioned to him, I might go out, I might not come home, I might bring someone home, and I'm hoping that's okay with you. And he said, you know what I love about you is that you live your life unapologetically. And it really struck a chord with me. So I started thinking more and more about that and realized that it goes deeper. And in hearing stories from clients and friends about infidelities and indiscretions and not being fully honest with a committed partner, that people seek out experiences and opportunities with others because of shame that they feel and reactions they've gotten from a main partner. And I wanted to help with that problem.
So shame really affects our sexuality. So what made you decide to focus on this area? Because it sounds like a lot of your work seems to emphasize in the area between shame and sexuality.
Yeah, I think that a lot of times, unfortunately, especially in Western culture, there's such a premium placed on the idea of fidelity. And when infidelity happens due to, let's say, a shame-related philosophy or shame-related self-identity, then things like marriages and families can become tragically and unnecessarily broken up. Because what can happen is somebody decides that they want to broach the subject of a kink or a fetish or an activity with their partner, and if they're met with ridicule or shame or judgment, they probably won't seek that activity with their partner again. They might go outside of that relationship to seek that activity. And then if that is discovered, then a lot of times a partner will choose to end that relationship because they feel betrayed. And I think the consequences to that are very disproportionate to the behavior.
The person who chooses to end the relationship, however, probably doesn't have the level of sex education and awareness that we have. So what do you think could be done or should be done in those cases?
That's a great question. And honestly, that's a question sort of at, let's call it a national level or a humanitarian level, and also down to the family and individual level. And so if we break that up, I think at the kind of national / humanitarian level, working in a movement to help promote the idea of sex for pleasure's sake, of everyone having the right to their own sexuality and their own experiences and their own sexual identity, is a movement that we should, you know, as workers in this industry, we should encourage, as well as spread the word to other folks and make it palatable, increase understanding and make it accessible. Make that idea of pleasure for pleasure's sake and authenticity as the norm, instead of the way most Westerners see it as a source of shame and scandal and secrecy. That's kind of the 30,000 foot level. On an individual level, I feel like there can be conversations where we build greater awareness around identifying our own sources of shame or judgment, recognizing them, and then working to curtail them, and then pointing them out when they occur in our dear friends and our close social circles. You know, and they can be those really subtle, seemingly little things, like somebody decides to disclose that they have bisexuality-related fantasies, and a good friend might say, oh my God, that's weird, or I wouldn't tell that to everybody. Calling them out on that and saying, why isn't that okay? And why shouldn't I be comfortable in expressing who I am and what I want, everybody gets to advocate for themselves and live their own lives. And giving people that courage to do that is a lifelong challenge. In the United States, there's been a push recently for there to be very restrictive sex education. Even here locally, it's an ongoing battle we face in the county where I live, in Clark County, to just have simple things like contraception information and gender identity information as part of the school curriculum. So there are so many different facets and kind of spokes of these wheels that need work, and I just want to do my part.
That's fantastic. It really does feel like one step forward, two steps back in times, and the work, the advocacy, the pushing forward with the importance of sex education, this work just never seems to end. And it's really important to realize that a lot of what is happening with our clients has a lot to do with the climate, like you mentioned just now, the national level, the family level, and also the individual level. So, you know, you mentioned pleasure for pleasure's sake. So some listeners may not really understand what that means. So I think it'll be useful to flesh it out a little bit.
Certainly. The idea that sexuality and sexual behavior doesn't necessarily have to serve any other purpose than physical and emotional pleasure. And that can be a foreign concept, or at least an uncomfortable idea for a lot of folks. Much of that has to do with cultural gender roles. A lot of that comes from ideas deeply held in religions. And some of that has to do strictly with access to reproductive health care and the ability to enjoy sexuality with a reduced fear of getting ill.
Yeah, sure. So, yes, we have a break, and we'll come back after this and flesh this out a little bit more. We're with Dr. Shameless, and we are talking about moving from shame to courage today. So stay tuned.
Your conscious lifestyle on steroids. OM Times Radio. IOM FM. Host your show on IOM FM, the radio network of OM Times Media, one of the more recognized brand names in the conscious community, and is backed by the extensive marketing reach of OM Times. Hosting a show on IOM FM immediately connects you with our extensive, dedicated community.
Hi, I'm Kelly Fox, host and astrologer of The Astrology Show. Each week, I'll give you access to the current transits, which are a valuable tool that provide astrological information to help unlock the potential each of us has. Understanding the stars can help steer us in the right direction to make better informed choices. So if you're wondering what's going to happen in your week ahead, be sure to tune in to The Astrology Show for guidance, Mondays at 9 p.m. Eastern Time.
Every 2 minutes, an American is sexually assaulted. The majority of victims know their attacker. It could be your friend, your neighbor, or someone you met at a party. If you said no, it's rape, and it's a crime. This is Christina Ricci with RAIN. Call the National Sexual Assault Hotline today at 1-800-656-HOPE or visit RAIN.org. That's RAINN.ORG.
Brought to you by RAIN and this station.
Welcome back. You're on Eros Evolution, or Eros Evolution, and I'm a Martha, and I'm the host, and I'm from Eros Coaching, and I'm with Dr. Shameless, and you can find her at drshameless.com. So you're listening to this show on the OM Times Radio Network, and you can share this show with your friends by going to the link omtimes.com/mobile. So with this link, you'll be able to listen to the show without needing to download any app. So today we are talking about moving from shame to courage. And just before the break, Dr. Shameless was explaining to us the importance of having pleasure for pleasure's sake. So she started to talk about how we are affected by culture, religion, and of course, all these reproductive messages that we get. So what is there anything else that you would like to elaborate on, Dr. Shameless?
I would, thank you. I feel like growing up in the United States and in, you know, just Western culture in general, one of the pervasive messages we received as women is that we are to tolerate sex. We are to gift it to our partners, and that there really isn't an okay time for us to enjoy it for itself and to derive any physical pleasure from it. And I think that's an incredibly incorrect and dangerous message that's been pervasive and kind of shoved down our throats, unfortunately. Creating that shift in our culture and in our, you know, kind of identity as humans is a really important piece of deconstructing shame. Because even if we think about something as simple as being vocal during sex, so somebody moaning for pleasure or emitting a scream or an exclamation, sometimes that's been viewed with, parallels being drawn to, well, that's just slutty behavior, or, you know, that's inappropriate, or that's not very becoming of a lady. And so we get definitely discouraged from enjoying pleasure and just enjoying sex for pleasure's sake. And if we're going to get rid of shame, we have to get rid of that idea.
Yeah. So when you say our sexuality being gifted to our partners, it suddenly comes to mind those people that I know of who get really angry when they catch their partner masturbating or watching porn or basically expressing their sexuality in any way without them. And it really certainly feels like their sexuality when they get together with a partner now belongs to them. So this is really important to be talking about pleasure for pleasure's sake, because I feel that it's important because it allows us to feel alive, juicy, yummy, and that contributes so much to our happiness.
I agree, and I think it allows us to be whole. I mean, if we look at, you know, journals in terms of neonatal medicine and pregnancy and gestation, we know there's indisputable evidence that all genders masturbate in the womb. So fetuses are masturbating. So sexual pleasure is there with us from the very beginning. And to denounce it and to deny it as we get older is really counterintuitive and counterproductive to living a whole authentic life.
So it's very interesting that when we are kids, you know, we are encouraged to be creative and we do role play and we go into fantasy, and suddenly as an adult, we don't give ourselves permission to do that. And I get a lot of questions being thrown to me like, is it normal to fantasize? Is it right? Is it okay? So a lot of our work as sexologists seems to be giving permission to our clients. And this really makes them feel completely disempowered. So this is kind of right up what you are saying about how shame is showing up. So how else is shame showing up needlessly in a catastrophic kind of way in our relationships, you think?
I really believe one of the biggest contributors to shame is religion, unfortunately. I think there's a lot to be said for religion in terms of guiding principles and ethics, and there are lovely aspects to religion. Unfortunately, I feel like in the past 100 years or so, there's been very much of a shift to using so-called or pseudo-religious tenets to police people and to create a culture of shame and to just make it so that people are feeling either punished or outed or living outside of an authentic, you know, spiritual life if they share certain preferences or share certain fantasies or, you know, likes of, you know, activities. So that's one area that I think needs to be examined and many times deconstructed. I feel like body image and just physicality is another source of incredible amounts of shame, especially, I don't even know if it's especially for women anymore. I think that men are being body shamed just as much as women are sometimes. and the, you know, the mass marketing. Yeah, that kind of that ideal body type leads to a lot of feelings of shame and just lack of adequacy.
Yeah, I definitely agree with you that all these things show up in our relationships. A few weeks ago, I was reading this article in a magazine, and it talked about a woman who's never had her makeup removed in front of her partner and had all these eyelash extensions. Even when she's sleeping, because she just can't bear the idea of being told that her eyes were not big enough. And I think these things does show up in our relationships. And you know, we are not just we are not free, and we are not opened to being ourselves.
Right. I come across a lot of folks who have either been engaging in infidelity, or are worried about infidelity, or in those kinds of areas because of inhibition in their sexual lives with their partner, because somebody a long time ago said they had flabby underarms, or there's a belly roll, or their breasts are two different sizes, and so they don't want their partner to see them with the lights on, and they won't ever let their partner see them standing up naked. And it just leads to such kind of buzzkill. It just sort of kills the mood. And it makes it so that the focus shifts away from pleasure and mutual exploration and focuses instead on reassurance and making somebody feel better about themselves in a way that it's never going to happen externally.
So I feel what happens is we actually get traumatized by these messages that we get in some way, or we replay them over and over in our heads. This becomes our reality, that is this inability to be able to filter information, especially when you're a kid. And so these messages starts to really affect our lives. And I think as adults now, we need to be able to heal ourselves so that we can move on fearlessly and courageously. I think this is exactly what you're talking about, having courage to heal ourselves and move forward and go and move away from shame. So how do you suggest that we can begin to do that?
Great, thank you. And I wholeheartedly agree. I just want to touch on one thing before we look at the solution for shame, is a point that you just brought up. As adults, we are living with the products of what happened as children. So for all the parents listening out there, please take this message as a suggestion and a coaching tip for raising the next generations. The more we instill shame in children, the longer this problem persists. So I think that part of solving this shame issue involves identifying the origins of shame. So whether it came from religion, whether it comes from media, whether it comes from an abusive partner, whether it comes from family messaging, whether it comes from their own identity and physicality, whether it comes from history of sexually transmitted diseases, whether it comes from pregnancy-related changes in our bodies, there are so many origins of shame. So part of it is sort of looking at it and saying, what are the messages I hold near and dear about sexuality? Where did they come from? Do they still resonate with me? What was the person that when I got the message originally, do I know what the intention was? So I can think back to times in high school as a product of, growing up in the 80s. And the idea was girls were supposed to retain virginity because the AIDS epidemic was rampant and we were having our highest rates of unintended teen pregnancy. So basically the girls were told, you're to not have sex. Well, so if a girl takes that from the 1980s and carries that message through, I'm supposed to say no to sex. That was the message we got as kids. It's a pretty hard message to undo. So what we might do is look at the intention behind that message. Well, back then, they didn't understand AIDS and HIV. We had a very puritanistic outlook on female sexuality in terms of pleasure. And so the intentions were to avoid unintended pregnancy, to maintain quote unquote, you know, dignity, and to not get a sexually transmitted infection. So if we take a woman in her 40s right now and we look at those intentions, does saying no to sex make sense? Well, we know how to control pregnancy. We know how to, you know, lower our risk for transmission of STDs. And if we've embraced this idea that women are able to enjoy sex for sex sake and pleasure, then we don't have to worry about this perceived dignity piece. So examining the origins, looking at the intentions behind them, and then really looking inside of ourselves to figure out if we still identify with and resonate with those values from long ago is a first step to dismantling shame.
Definitely. So basically, we're using our coaching questions to get ourselves to reflect, and the answers will heal the parts of us that still hold on to shame. It's really important to start to coach ourselves where there are no coaches available, or coach ourselves so that we start to basically adult ourselves and then we grow up.
Exactly. And I think that, you know, what we're seeing, at least right now in the United States, in terms of the Me Too movement and the onslaught of accusations of sexual harassment and sexual assault by many people, and the shift, the sea change that is happening right now in terms of not being afraid to come forward, and that the onus, it has now shifted on the people who have been perpetrating these wrongs. They are the ones that are now feeling shame for doing those bad acts, whereas the victims or the people who have been perpetrated against are finding power. And I feel like using that movement can be an incredibly helpful tool in reducing shame in all aspects of sexuality. It's unfortunate that it came to this, but we might as well take advantage.
Yes, it's definitely true. So you're talking about the Me Too movement. So let's talk a little bit about it after this break.
Great.
Free your mind with Om Times Radio, IOM FM. Om Times Magazine is one of the leading online content providers of positivity, wellness, and personal empowerment. A philanthropic organization, their net proceeds are funneled to support worldwide charity initiatives via Humanity Healing International. Through their commitment to creating community and providing conscious content, they aspire to uplift humanity on a global scale. Om Times. Co-creating a more conscious lifestyle.
More than 24 million Americans have an autoimmune disorder, and that number continues to grow. I'm Sharon Saylor, and I'm one of those 24 million. To put that number in perspective, cancer affects about 9 million and heart disease up to 22 million. That's why I've brought together top experts and those thriving regardless of their diagnosis to bring you the latest, most up-to-date information. Join me, Sharon Saylor, Friday night, 7 p.m. Eastern, for the Autoimmune Hour on Life Interrupted Radio to find out how to live your life uninterrupted.
What's up? This is Brad and Mike from Linkin Park for Lifebeat, the music industry fights AIDS. Listen up, times are tough and you get a lot of things thrown your way. If you're being pressured to have sex and you're not ready, then say no. If you're having sex, be smart and use protection. Respect yourself and protect yourself.
For more information, call the National AIDS Hotline at 1-800-342-AIDS or log on to www.lifebeat.org.
Welcome back to Eros Evolution. This is where sexuality and spirituality meet. And this is Martha, and we are with Dr. Shamler. She's a licensed clinical professional counselor practicing in Las Vegas, and she's also a clinical sexologist with a doctor in human sexuality. You can find her at docshameless.com. And today we've been talking about shame and what is been doing to our relationships, how we can begin to heal ourselves with asking ourselves some very simple coaching questions. And yes, you can definitely go back and replay this episode. What you can do is go to the station, that's Om Times, and retrieve this episode, moving from shame to courage. You can also go to my page, that's Eros Evolution at a Glance. Just Google Eros Evolution at a Glance, and you'll be able to find all the episodes there. So yes, we were talking, starting to talk about the Me Too revolution. So tell us a little bit more what it is and how this is shifting the climate of things.
Definitely. So several weeks ago, there was revitalization of the Me Too movement that actually began about 10 years ago in an effort to reduce shame around sexual assault, sexual harassment, and basically to create community and create a safe space for folks that had been assaulted, victimized, harassed, and any other way sexually violated, to create a catchphrase, an identifier, much like in the AA movement of Do You Know John? And that's how some folks in recovery can help identify other folks in recovery. A woman decided to start this movement as a very easy way to find community around other people that had been victimized. And then it was revitalized several weeks ago and has gained incredible support and incredible attention in the media, along with the Harvey Weinstein accusations and then several other people in the popular media, as we all know, politicians, actors, all kinds of things. And what's important to realize is that you don't have to be a famous person to be a perpetrator or a victim. Sexual assault and harassment occurs in every walk of life, in every socioeconomic status, in every part of the world. What I think is shifting is the idea that a person who's been assaulted has something to be ashamed about by talking about it, and it is shifting to holding people accountable for those bad acts and those bad behaviors. So I feel like it's a great and opportunistic time to look at reducing shame on lots of different levels and proactively. It doesn't need to get to the point of sexual assault or harassment for us to be moving from shame to courage.
Definitely. And we can actually deal with shame in little areas of our lives as well, in all areas, little ones as well. So what about when shame comes up or shows up at the heat of the moment, you know, little things that come up? I think I refer to it like how we parent or talk to ourselves in our heads.
Right. I think that a lot of the messages that repeat on loop over in our head were ingrained in there, as we talked about earlier, from childhood or from past partners. They've been there so long, we don't even think about them. Like, I bet if you really thought about it, we don't even know which hand we use to brush our teeth. It's automatic. It's something that we don't think about or give any kind of consciousness to. Sometimes those are the messages that replay in our heads over our bodies, over our abilities, over our responses in terms of sexuality. So what might happen is a person might have decided long ago, based on some shame-based idea, that they shouldn't be the recipient of oral sex because of a certain taste or a certain smell or a certain look. And they've gotten that message so ingrained and entangled into their psyche that when they meet a partner and that partner suggests it, their reaction is so hostile and so aggressive and so vehement. They're like, no, oh my God, no, you can't do that. Oh, no. So what we end up with is basically shame spilling over, because that person, the potential recipient, is coming from a place of shame because they don't want to be the recipient, because they have a notion in their head that there's something wrong with their genitals, that they're not a good oral sex recipient partner, and that they shouldn't do this because of some badness about them, something that's bad about the way they are. Unfortunately, what also happens is when they have that vehement and indignant response, the person who asked oftentimes will question themselves and say, oh my God, did I ask something bad? Did I ask something wrong? Am I weird for wanting to perform oral sex? then that has a trickle-down effect and a domino effect, and they might start to develop a shameful attitude toward offering oral sex. And we have this horrible domino effect.
Yeah, I mean, we start to question and doubt ourselves because of reactions of other people, and they themselves are, I don't know, like sexually ignorant and wounded themselves. So this change just never starts to end, really, and it just keeps continuing. So it's really important that we get clear. And I certainly got a lot of healing because of the education that I received as part of my training. And so what do you think all of us can be doing besides asking ourselves coaching questions? What else can we be doing?
Great question. I think that there's a bit of a three-part answer. So shame lives in places of secrecy, silence, and judgment. So if we think about secrecy, in order to conquer that, we need to basically let someone in. We need to talk to somebody about what we're feeling. We need to have a conversation about it. We need to allow vulnerability. We need to say, I'm really worried that because my labia protrude a lot, that my vulva won't be attractive to you. And that's the reason that we can only have sex with the lights off. So getting to that place of being able to first identify the source of shame. I don't like the way my labia looks. I've been told that protruding labia or floppy lips are unattractive. I've heard that message. I've checked in with that message and realized I'm not really sure where it came from, and I'm not really sure it resonates with me anymore, and I want to get rid of that idea. So what we do is we share that with a trusted partner or person to talk about it. Now, that doesn't necessarily have to be an intimate partner. It could be your closest girlfriend. It could be a sister. It could be a mom. But giving voice and taking it out of the darkness and into the light can be a first step to conquering this. So then maybe this trusted friend or partner or mom or somebody says, oh my God, no, that's absolutely normal. And they come in all different shapes and sizes. And here, let's look on the internet, or let's look at the book Petals by, you know, Mr. Karras, and let's look at all the different shapes and sizes and colors that labia come in, and realize there's no right one, no good one, no perfect one. And then replacing our negative self-talk with positive self-talk. My labia are beautiful. My vulva is attractive. I'm fine just the way I am. So we get rid of the self-judgment. We get rid of the negative shaming messages that we perpetuate within our own heads. These are, I think, the greatest and most effective steps at getting rid of shame.
Definitely. So it's important to bring it into the light, talk about it, and to be vulnerable. I think there are so many people who are afraid of being hurt that they don't talk about what is really in their mind. And because of that, it continues to weigh on them and affect their lives and, of course, their level of happiness.
Right. And getting to that vulnerable space can be incredibly scary. Like you said, people are worried about getting hurt, and people are worried about being mocked or further shamed or having judgment cast on them. But what we need to remember is a statement that we've heard all throughout our lives. We are our own worst critics. The chances that somebody else is going to chime in and agree with and align themselves with our internalized perceived shame is pretty small. Like, I don't think that there are going to be a lot of close friends or good partners out there that are going to say, you know, you're right, you really are kind of smelly. And you know what, if we happen to find that person, then maybe either we say, wow, is that true? And you know, maybe I, you know, there's a medical condition I need to look into, or maybe there's a different soap I could use or something like that. And then say, you know, would you go with me on this journey to see if it can change, or check in with someone else and get a second opinion? But I think that being that vulnerable can indeed be incredibly scary. The interesting thing is, if people want to move out of shame, they're going to have to do something different. So doing the same thing over and over again is going to yield the exact same result. And if we're not living our authentic sexual full selves, then by not doing anything, we're just going to stay there and we'll be stuck.
Mm. Yeah. So culture plays a big role in that, you know, us feeling what's normal and deviant, right?
Definitely. We can look as close as Europe to the idea of kind of condoned extramarital affairs, mistresses, whatever you want to call it. And that's a very different concept than here in the United States, where that would be seen as scandalous. We can look at anything like it, like even an open relationship. And until very recently, that would be viewed with mockery, contempt, and a lot of judgment from a lot of big institutions and ingrained places. So culture plays a huge role. If we're talking about things like fetishes, like BDSM, you know, our culture and our laws and our societal rules play a lot into this. People are still at risk of losing their children to child protective service organizations if they engage in BDSM behaviors. That's a reality that people face. So if basically the message you're getting is from a child protective organization that your lifestyle is not conducive to the healthy raising of children, it's going to be hard to reject that idea of shame about your lifestyle. That's a pretty big obstacle to overcome. So a lot of these things are very much societally based, culturally based, and systemically based. And so there's a lot of work to do, and we can only start with ourselves. So it's individuals first.
Yes, that's really important. So we have 1 minute to break. Is there anything you'd like to say or elaborate on?
Yeah, I think that I would just ask people to kind of take a moment and ponder to themselves. You know, we can start with a positive message. What do I love about my sexual self? What do I celebrate about my sexual self? And then maybe take the risk of having that conversation with a trusted friend or partner. If we start out with the positive, it can be a lot less scary. So looking for things to celebrate and looking for things to say I'm proud of or that I'm happy about, and that can create that atmosphere and environment of that safe space of having these conversations, especially when they get scarier, to this is something I don't feel good about, this is something I worry about, this is something I have shame around. So starting with the positive. Yeah.
Definitely. Yeah, it's so important to be able to dialogue about it, because I think our friends do a big part in normalizing things for us.
Definitely.
Okay, so yeah, we have a break and we'll come back for the last 15 minutes of the show.
Great.
Bringing you the best of the conscious minds in the world, Om Times Radio, your conscious lifestyle on steroids. The number one reason girls drop out of school in sub-Saharan Africa is lack of access to feminine hygiene products. The Pads for School Girls project, an outreach of Humanity Healing International, is changing this paradigm by setting up sewing programs at schools, teaching girls a vocational skill, while producing the reusable pads that help keep them attending classes. The girls pay it forward by making and giving pad kits to other girls in need. To learn more, visit humanityhealing.org. Humanity Healing is where your heart is.
It's on us to stop sexual assault.
To get in the way before it happens.
To get a friend home safe.
And to not blame the victim.
It's on us.
To look out for each other.
To not look the other way.
It's on us to stand up.
To step in.
To take responsibility.
It's on us, all of us,
to stop sexual assault.
Learn how and take the pledge at itsonus.org.
And welcome back to the last 15 minutes of today's show. And in this show, we always explore the link between sex and spirit. And so I haven't asked Dr. Shameless for today. What do you see is the link between sex and spirit for you?
Great. I think, you know, a huge element of spirituality for me is understanding and embracing and celebrating everything about ourselves, our whole humanity, our whole place in the universe. Sexuality is definitely a piece of that. When we let shame in, what it does is it stunts our sexuality, and therefore we are not able to engage in the universe in a fully authentic spiritual way. And I think that that hurts us collectively. It takes away from some of the universal energy. I think it takes away from the joy. And I think it takes away from a sense of interconnectedness. So by embracing ourselves and our sexuality and decreasing shame, I think that we can add to the wholeness of the universe and create a positive input into our spiritual selves.
Yeah, that's really important. So, what else about shame would you like to talk about for today's show?
I think it's a really interesting kind of reflective idea to think about what we find sexy in someone else. So, if we're starting on this journey of moving from shame to courage, what we might do is think about who we have found sexy or sexually attractive, or you know, a person that has gotten us, you know, turned on or that we emulate. And usually a pretty common theme in that area is confidence. Well, the opposite of confidence is pretty much shame. So if reducing shame and conquering shame, if the steps to doing that seem scary, if they seem like vulnerability is too risky, I think, you know, having that incentive of, wow, what looks really sexy to other people is confidence and comfort in our own skin, then it might be a good incentive to take that chance and explore all this shame work and work to conquer it. Because when I think about working with couples and working with people and talking with friends and being with partners, an overwhelming piece of what resonates, it's not a size two. It's not having a perfect figure or bleached white teeth or a perfect hairdo or amazing pecs or a six pack of abs. It's confidence. And I think that we can see that now more and more with the body positivity movement, that people are beautiful in all shapes and sizes, and that confidence is what creates beauty. Loving yourself creates confidence. And therefore, we don't have to worry if there's an extra roll or some cellulite or, you know, someone's penis isn't as big as what we see in a porn, or somebody doesn't have the, you know, hasn't mastered squirting. We can start to let all that go. As long as we like what we have and who we have, what we have and who we are, we don't probably have to worry about being ashamed of anything.
Yeah, and how freeing that would be, you know, if we stop doing this to ourselves.
Absolutely. It's you know, it's being able to jump out of bed naked and walk to the kitchen and get a glass of water. It's something as simple as that. And I it's hard to even imagine the disruption in the mood when it's, you know, but wait, you know, don't turn the light on yet. I have to get my robe, or you know, oh, don't kiss me right now. I can't bear to see what I taste like. Or, you know, when all those things are gone, then fun comes back to sex. Laughing comes back to sex. Smiling comes back to sex. Also, what goes away is secrecy and betraying and hiding things. Because if somebody really, really, really wants to, you know, dress up in high heels and put on women's lingerie and they identify as male and that's what works for them, and they can't do that with their primary partner, and so they go out and seek that in other places, then that can be a cause of issue of pain and distrust and, you know, all kinds of bad things in a relationship. And if we can just say, wow, that's cool, that's what turned you on and you like that, doesn't hurt me, you can walk around and, you know, thigh-high stockings and pumps and, you know, lace panties all you want. That's cool. And I think that it's just a much more welcoming, and it creates trust. It creates intimacy. It strengthens those bonds.
Definitely.
Yeah.
Mm. So tell us a little bit more about yes. Mm-hmm. Yeah, go on.
Oh, it's just interesting to me that people would be so fearful. I can understand the fear around it, but I wish they could see the other side to that sense of freedom and to that sense of exploration and that sense of frivolity, just that sense of fun around sex and that it's there for us. I mean, there's a lot of heartache in this world. There's a lot of pain in this world. And if sex is there for us to enjoy and have pleasure around and kind of let our hair down, I would hope more people would want to embrace that.
Definitely. So tell us a little bit more about your work. Do you have any upcoming projects? And I know you do individual coaching, therapy, workshop. Mm-hmm. So people can go to your website and check out your work.
Yes. And I am just updating it and getting some more stuff on there. We've got a sexy consent workshop coming up on the 21st of this month here in Las Vegas. And I offer periodic Kink 101 workshops. And those are for people who want to either know more about it or be able to have that dialogue with their partner and get some tools around those conversations, or try to understand it if it's something their partner's into that they're not sure about. So it really is just a 101. I am definitely continuing my work learning about being trans in our culture and working within the trans community to elevate the therapeutic experience for folks in our community who identify as trans and for their families. So that's an area that that is near and dear to me. People can people can check out I've got an email subscription that they can sign on to at drshameless.com, and if they would like to get ongoing tips and tidbits and suggestions, worksheets, I plan on doing classes on oral sex and shame, the two-part workshop that I'm sure we will be repeating. And I did that with a fellow Las Vegas sex education specialist. Her name is Sex Coach Nikki. And we collaborated and put that on a few months ago. And that went really, really well. And I think that having those spaces to explore the conversations, obtain the vocabulary, practice those skills in a safe place, is really important. And I know that some people might be like, oh my God, I don't want to go to a sex workshop. It's going to be weird and I'm not weird and it's going to be crazy. I think we can realize that everybody's just a person. We all put our pants on one leg at a time and everybody shows up who they are and how they are. And from what I've seen, everybody comes with a really embracing and loving and accepting attitude. And that's been really nice. So I'm grateful for the community around that.
Yeah, it's really important to be able to have a community. Then we don't feel quite so isolated. And it's really important to also, you know, not be looking so inward and all the time. It really doesn't serve us.
Yeah, I think that when we look around, I surround myself with really good people and we have pretty frank and honest conversations. And I realize that I might describe somebody as beautiful and smart and engaging and lively and funny, and they might not really identify themselves that way. And so having those spaces to get that kind of reflection and then to really absorb it and take it on is important. So if somebody doesn't think that they have a particularly hot body and but they're getting messages from their friends that says, you're beautiful and wonderful and attractive and amazing, I think it can really help and go a long way toward getting rid of some of this negativity and negative self-talk. One of the interesting things that's become more and more popular, living in Las Vegas and having been here nearly 20 years, we are definitely a kind of a very looks-based and materialistic community, unfortunately, on some levels. And one of the things, as an example, that I help, that I think helps perpetuate the ideas around shame are things like the vaginoplasty. So it's plastic surgery to change the shape and the look of the vulva and of the, you know, the outer labia and maybe even the inner labia, I don't know. There are, you know, creams and tinctures and things that people use to make their vagina smaller and make their penis bigger. So I think that we need to kind of be astute and critical consumers and look at the motivation behind some of these products and procedures and ask ourselves, what's wrong with us the way we are? Why am I listening to this mass media marketing effort that's telling me how wrong my body is? I was made this way, so it probably is okay. Yeah. So it's interesting. Mm-hmm. And I think, yeah, just looking around and questioning things is a great start.
Yeah. That's very important to not just take everything at face value and to ask ourselves deeper. So, yeah, we've come to the end of the show. Thank you very much, Dr. Shameless. Be sure to check out her website, that's drshameless.com. And also, she's on Twitter, Facebook as drshameless702. So, in the meantime, have a great week ahead, listener. And next week, I have another guest, two more episodes to the end of the year. And after that, I'll be taking a break from Arrow's Evolution for a while. So, yes, stay tuned next week and have a great week ahead. Thank you and goodbye.
Thank you.
Thank you. Bye.
Thank you.